Welcome to the Common Sense Spirituality Show, the show that takes the mystery out of spirituality with your host, David Gagan. Engineer, science director, scholarly researcher of life's mysteries, and author of The Endless Journey.
Welcome to the Common Sense Spirituality Show. I'm host Dave Gagan, and today's show is titled Near-Death Experience Effects. Please note that all the chat room questions will be answered in the chat room on next week's show, as well as posted on my website, which is davidgagan.com, within a day or so of the show. I've been told that some of you are not aware that you can easily access these answers on my website, so I welcome you to welcome your questions and encourage you to visit the site. You can also listen to any previous show on iHeartRadio by going to the iHeart website, which is iHeart.com, and searching for either Dave Gagan or Common Sense Spirituality. NDE, or near-death experience, is a fascinating topic, and we've discussed it several times on previous shows. What impact an NDE has on the experiencer, and what we can learn from how their experience changed their lives, is the topic of today's show. If it's important enough for the spiritual world to interrupt someone's life, it is certainly important enough for us to learn from it as well. Our guest today is Deborah Diamond, author of Life After Near Death. In her previous profession, she was an investment professional, a professor at Johns Hopkins University, and a regular commentator on CNBC. She has been profiled in the Wall Street Journal, Forbes, and the Washington Post, amongst other places. The unique thing about Deborah is that she is a clairvoyant and a medium, which has given her a unique perspective on near-death experiences. Deborah Diamond, welcome to the show, Deborah.
Thank you very much, Dave. It's nice to be here.
Hey, it's great to have you. How'd you get involved with the near-death experience research?
Okay, sure. So, as you mentioned, I have a background as a money manager. I was in the money management business for many years, and that was really my chosen profession. However, when I was in the investment business, I always knew things. In other words, we always had a lot of reading to do, and they would drop off these big stacks of annual reports and prospectuses on my desk. And without even picking them up, I would know about the companies and the products and the management and the industries. And I never understood how that was possible, how I knew these things. Now, in the investment business, the term psychic is something that just never comes up. It's a dollars and cents business.
Exactly.
You know, I didn't know, and my boss used to say to me, you know, Deborah, you have good instincts. And I thought, yeah, I guess I just have good instincts. I didn't know how, you know, what else to attribute it to. So in 2008, I decided to take an intuition development class in New York because I figured, you know, I have good intuition and it would be fun to take a class to tune it up a little bit. So I signed up for this class. I live in Baltimore, but I went up to New York for the class, and it was a weekend class. And on Saturday morning, in the class, we did a few exercises that were very low key, and I was getting everything. I didn't quite understand how that was possible, but I wasn't too concerned about it because, as I said, they were very low key. When we took a break, and when we came back, the teacher said, "Now we're going to do a séance." And that was nothing that I, you know, was interested in. I certainly hadn't come to this class for a séance. But I thought, well, I'll just do this and then we'll go on to the next exercise. It was Saturday morning. The class ran through Sunday afternoon. And I thought, you know, we'll just keep going. So the teacher said, I'll put you in a meditative state. And if you see anything, you just let me know and I'll tell you what to do. And I thought, well, that doesn't pertain to me because I'm not going to see anything. So we meditated, and she took us out of the meditation, and then she said, "Does anyone see anything?" And I looked around the room, and everyone was looking at each other. I raised my hand, and she said, "Yes, Deborah, what do you see?" And I said, "I see about 50 people." So this is what happened to me. I had one of these spiritually transformative experiences that happened spontaneously. The people I was seeing in the room were, some of them were family members of mine who had passed. Some were people who went with the people in the class. And then there were some other random people that I was seeing as well. So the teacher said, if you see someone, for instance, in the corner of the room, that means they probably go with someone in that corner. So I said, well, I do in fact see someone in a corner. I described him. He was Hispanic with dark hair, handlebar mustache, big white teeth. And as I described him, a woman sitting in that corner began to sob. And she said, I can identify that person. That was my fiance. He died 2 years ago. So that woman said, if I show you pictures on my cell phone during the break, can you identify him? She said to me. And I said, yes, because he was very clear to me. So during the break, she flipped through these pictures on her cell phone, and I said, there, that's him. And she said, yes, that's my fiance. He died 2 years ago. She had wanted to hear from him, and she had not. So she was very grateful to me for making this connection. She thanked me, and she gave me a big hug. Now, remember, I used to work on Wall Street, and there aren't a lot of thank yous on Wall Street, and there's no hugs either. So, you know, this made a big impression on me that I had done something meaningful for someone. So I was overwhelmed and I was frightened and I was pretty shook up, but it did register that this was something profound. I went through the class the rest of the weekend, and Sunday night I drove back to Baltimore and I called one of my sons. I have three sons, but this one scores well in logic tests. And I explained to him what happened in the class. And he didn't say anything, but when I was all done, he said, well, that makes sense. We're just energy, and the energy has to go somewhere. So that made me feel a little more comfortable. It gave me a context for understanding what happened, sort of a pseudoscientific spiritual context for what happened. Still, I didn't tell anybody what happened. You know, many people have these spiritually transformative experiences and never talk about them because they don't want anyone to think they're crazy. They think, you know, no one's going to believe them. So they just keep their mouth shut. So I did the same. I didn't talk about it. That summer, I decided to go out to Taos, New Mexico to paint. And I had been to Taos a number of times in the past. And I'm an artist, and I made plans to go out there for 2 months to paint. I rented a place for 2 months. And what happened was, after 2 months, I was still there. As a matter of fact, after a number of years, I was still there. And that's kind of a common story for Taos. In Taos, when you talk to the locals and you say, how long have you been here? They say, oh, you know, I came for a weekend 20 years ago. So it's one of these places that if you're very spiritual, there are a lot of artists and writers and musicians there. It's just, you tend to stick. And it was in Taos that I began to unpack these abilities and these gifts that I was given, and I became very comfortable with them. And I began to do readings and work more with the energy I was given. Now, you're asking, how did I get into the NDE world? Eventually, I came back to Baltimore, and I thought, that's the end of all this. I'm not going to be doing this work in Baltimore because Baltimore is not like Taos. But that wasn't what happened. And I was asked, actually, to read for a well-known NDE or near-death experiencer in Washington, D.C. And when this person had a near-death experience and came back with some unusual after effects. So, you know, after I read for him, I started thinking, what happened to him? Why does he have these after effects? And what about other NDEers? What do they get? And how do they get this? And what are they supposed to do with it? So I Googled NDE after effects, and I found that there hadn't been any research done. So I thought, well, I guess I'll just have to do the research. And it's not that far-fetched, because when I was in the investment business, I was a healthcare research analyst. That was what I did, and with very early stage companies that were so early stage, they weren't even cutting edge. So I knew how to do original research. So that's how I got led into this.
Okay. Well, you know what I thought about, I liked your book, by the way. I read your book.
Thank you very much.
What I thought unusual about your book was that, you know, you did not just interview the people who had NDEs. You jointly interviewed their spiritual source being a medium, I guess you were capable of doing that, and help them ask the questions so that you could better understand their experience. Tell the audience a little bit about how you did that.
Sure, Dave. So I decided that I would conduct research on these individuals. I was looking for after effects that were only cognitive and physiologic, because I wanted after effects that were irrefutable and demonstrable. So cognitive after effects like newfound musical ability or mathematical ability, or physiologic after effects like enhanced vision or enhanced eyesight and hearing. And these were after effects that had been medically documented, so you couldn't refute them. And I thought, you know, I'll do conventional research. I'll interview these folks and I'll give them questionnaires, which is what you do in conventional research. But I thought, you know, I'm a psychic and a medium. And whatever happened to these people, wherever they went in their NDEs, is a place that science can't access. And, you know, you can give them questionnaires all day long, and they're still not going to be able to answer some of these questions. And they had questions themselves about what happened to them, questions like, who were the beings of light that I met? Or why did I have a life review with my grandmother? Or why didn't I have a life review? So, you know, they didn't know the answer to those questions. I certainly didn't know the answer. So I asked them, you know, if they'd be amenable to readings. And all of them were interested in that because, as I said, they had questions. And I have the ability as a psychic medium to do this. So, you know, I thought, let's see what happens if we do readings. Maybe we'll get some more information. And in fact, we did, because I was able to go with them where they went in their NDEs. So that's what happened. And you know, very quickly I got taken into the realm of consciousness. I originally thought I would be exploring these buckets of NDE after effects, but I think Spirit had another idea for me. And I got taken into this realm of consciousness and manifestation and intention and lots of other things that were unexpected.
Yeah. Let's talk about some of the common effects that, you know, that you found that happened to these people. And I guess, you know, each NDE experiencer, they had a different set of effects. But let's talk about some, you know, like enhanced hearing and such like that.
Sure. So there's a whole variety of NDE after effects, and in fact, after effects from spiritually transformative experiences. Many people will come back and say, I'm more spiritual now, you know, and the thing is, I couldn't measure that. I don't know how spiritual you were before. You know, there's no way to measure how much more spiritual you are now. Many people come back psychic and mediumistic. Again, you know, something you can't measure. But there are people who come back with, let's say, enhanced hearing or enhanced vision. So there's a case in the book of a man, Robert Barr, who is a former police officer from L.A. He was in the riot squad in South Central L.A. and Watts. So his job was to beat people and gas people. He was not a very nice guy. And he had a physical, was checked out, and, you know, had passed with flying colors. And he went off to visit his son in Phoenix for a week. And he had a lovely time with his son. His son drove him to the airport, and Robert said his goodbyes and thanked his son for his visit. And got out of the car and said, you know, he just wasn't feeling well. But he went into the airport, and as he said, he John Wayne'd it through the airport until he got on the airplane. And then he dropped dead. Now, you don't have to actually clinically die to have an NDE, but in his case he did, and there were paramedics on the plane. They revived him. While he was out of his body, he had a life review. He saw and heard people from his life talking about him behind his back. He heard what they had to say about him. And when he came back from his NDE, he said, I only want to do good. And he means it. And he moved to Oregon. He's now a grant writer for not-for-profits. Anyway, his eyesight was checked before and after his NDE. And before his NDE, his eyesight was 20/90. And after his NDE, his eyesight was 20/10, which is better than perfect vision. And it's been 5 years now, and that improvement is still going strong. So there are, you know, there are other cases of improved eyesight. I was reading about on a near-death experience chat site on Facebook. They were talking about, you know, how people come back with improved vision. And so there, you know, there are many cases of this. There are people who return with enhanced hearing. So I don't know if you know the author Penny Sartori. She's a nurse in the UK. She wrote a book about NDEs. And I was communicating with her when I was writing my book. We were emailing. And she emailed me one day and said, you know, I know of a man who has the kind of after effect that you're interested in. He has enhanced hearing. And here's his website. So I went to his website and I looked at his picture and I said, oh, my God, he's the cashier at Sid's. Sid's is the grocery store in Taos. So he was actually a guy I knew. You know, I contacted him, and he said, yeah, I recognize you. And so he had an NDE when he was a teenager. He had an accident on his bike. And when he came back from his NDE, he was living in Boston. And he came home from work one day, and he heard this very high-pitched noise, and he couldn't figure out where it was coming from. And he finally tracked it down, and it was coming from a box in his closet that was his alarm system. The only thing was the alarm system hadn't been armed yet. It hadn't even been set up. So he could, you know, detect these very high-pitched noises. And then he found when he was working at Sid's, the grocery store, he found that he could hear people, he could hear conversations in the back of the store. You know, he was at the front of the store as a cashier, and it's a fairly large store. He could hear conversations in the back of the store. There are other cases of people with enhanced hearing who hear conversations down the street. There's a husband and wife team who are both NDEers, and this is how they communicate with each other when they're traveling. So there are, you know, those cases of enhanced hearing. There are cases of enhanced IQ. There's a woman who contacted me who lives in California who said she had an NDE in childbirth many years ago, and she didn't know what happened to her. You know, many people are not familiar with the term NDE. They don't know what happened to them. All they know is that they came back transformed, that they're changed, something happened. And she had an NDE in childbirth, and she noticed after her NDE that her mental processes were speeding up, and she would find that, like, she was watching TV one day with her niece, and they were watching a figure skating competition, and it was one of those things where the scores are tallied by a computer and then put up on the television, and she was coming up with the scores before they were posted on TV, and her niece said to her, how are you doing that? You know, so she has many stories of, you know, this change in her mental faculties. And so she had her IQ tested. Now, her IQ had been tested before her NDE. It was 122. And then she had it tested again after the NDE, and it was 145. So there are, you know, these cases of enhanced IQ as well.
Yeah. So what do you think? What do you think, you know, why does this happen? You know, this is kind of amazing. I mean, there's a number of things that you brought out in the book that, you know, athletic ability, healing, artistic abilities, electrical sensitivity, all these things that can change. Why do you think this happens to people in NDE?
Well, first of all, let me just say, you know, in terms of electrical sensitivity, that many people are electrically sensitive. You don't have to have an NDE to be electrically sensitive. I do a lot of interviews and a lot of talks, and I do a lot of readings, and I meet many, many people who are electrically sensitive who've never had a near-death experience. So it seems to be connected to – it's an energetic or electrical kind of sensitivity that may – come around from a spiritual practice or, you know, some other things. But why does this happen? Well, we found that people who had NDEs come back, return from their NDEs with their energy altered. So it appears as if their consciousness is flung out of their bodies. And wherever their consciousness goes, you know, it appears to go, let's just say it goes out into the universe. We don't really know the exact place it goes, but appears to go out into something like the universe, the cosmos, and it's almost like it gets altered out there or enhanced out there. And then when it returns to the body, you know, these people seem to have like really too much consciousness. And, you know, we're not built for that. Here on Earth, we're basically a physical body with a little bit of consciousness, but NDEers come back with an overload of consciousness, again, with their energy altered. And this seems to play a role in these after effects, because a lot of these after effects are energetically related. So, I mean, hearing is sound waves, you know, vision is light waves. Musical ability is, you know, has to do with vibration and resonance. You know, lots of these things seem to be linked energetically. So, but with the NDEers, it does seem as if, you know, they come back not only with their energy altered, but with like an overload of consciousness. And this is what makes it very difficult for them to navigate the Earth, because now they've got sort of one foot out in the universe and one foot on Earth, and we're really not built to live that way.
It seems like in your book, it seemed to me that the people that came back, they had another purpose in life, and many times, or at least in the experiences that you cited, these enhanced capabilities could be used and were beneficial in the new tasks that they took on, the new life that they took on after the NDE.
That's correct, Dave. And now it doesn't always work that way, but I told all the cases, and by the way, I spoke to, you know, a universe of more than 50 people when I was working on the book, and it took about a dozen of the most interesting cases for the book. I told them they could ask whatever questions they wanted in their readings, and they all had questions, but they all had two questions that were the same, and those were, why me, and what's my mission? And they always said the word mission. They didn't say, you know, what job should I take next, or should I go back to college? So, you know, they're all searching for, they all felt as if they had something to accomplish here on Earth, something that would help others, that would help the Earth, that would somehow even raise the vibration of the Earth. So, you know, that was an issue for all of them. Now, the luckier ones come back from their NDEs with a mission that they know and they understand and they can implement. So, for instance, if you're a musician and you're a new age musician, you can, you know, that's something that you can do here on Earth. I mean, you know, we have the equipment available to execute that. So, And that's a mission that actually does, in fact, touch a lot of people. You know, music can touch a lot of people, and that higher vibrational music, that new age music, you know, does impact people. It's used in meditation. It's used in yoga practices and whatnot. So, you know, somebody who has a musical after effect is a lot better off than, you know, some people come back and say, I know I have a mission, but I don't know what it is, and they can't identify it. They know that they're supposed to do something to touch people, but they don't know what it is. So music is one. Art is another one that, you know, touches a lot of people. There are several artists, you know, who came back as artists in the book Life After Near Death, and their art resonates with people, so that when people stand in front of the art, they make a connection with the art, and they have their own interpretation of, you know, what they're getting from the art. So that's something that, you know, you can, art is something that can connect with individuals.
Does everybody have a mission on Earth? You think when we come down before an NDE, do we all have something that we're supposed to accomplish, some mission?
I don't know the answer to that. I mean, you know, I can only tell you that for the people that I worked with, they all expressed this desire to find their mission, and it seemed to be something that came up as a result of their experience. For other people, I mean, I do read for lots of people, and lots of people ask me what, you know, about their life path. You know, I think everybody's looking for meaning in their life. You know, does everyone have a mission? I don't know. I mean, okay. It's just, I don't know.
See, I believe you do, and I think that when somebody has an NDE, for example, it's because maybe they were knocked off their mission for some reason, and they need to get back on track, and they're far enough off that the spiritual world feels that they need a correction, if you will. So they get that. But anyway, it's a fascinating concept. Can you request an NDE? Can you talk to your source and say, hey, boy, I'd like one.
Right. So, you know, a lot of people did say to me when I was writing this book and I was talking about NDEs, they'd say, you know, I'd like one of those. Those sound so great. You know, this would be just what I'm looking for to enhance my abilities. And I would scratch my head and think, you know, maybe I didn't do a very good job of explaining this, because this is not the sort of thing that you want. It makes life difficult to navigate. You can't really request an NDE. You know, the Harvard philosopher, educator, and doctor, William James, said in 1904 about spiritually transformative experiences, you can't bring them on, and anyone who says that you can is lying. You know, this is something that is in the purview of the universe. This is under the universe's control, not under an individual's control. It seems to happen at a time, you know, that the universe picks sort of an exquisite moment when a person is their consciousness is flung out of their body to have this experience, so that they can return on a different path. Now, there are people, you know, I found in the research that intention does play a role, that many of these people seem to be on a path towards their experience prior to it happening. So many of them had already changed their diets. Maybe they were practicing yoga. Maybe they had become more spiritual. You know, in terms of somebody just bringing it on, I see now, I see courses online, you know, near-death experiences are a hot topic, and I see courses online, you know, for people to come and, you know, learn how to have an NDE, and I just think, wow, you can't do that.
Probably not. We're talking with Deborah Diamond, author of Life After Near Death. When somebody has a near-death experience, they seem to interface with a single spirit. Is that the case? Is there usually one central spirit that the NDEer interfaces with? Or do they talk to a whole bunch of them?
Yeah, I think everyone's experience is different. You know, it seems to be very much a customized experience because, you know, after all, this is a learning experience, so it has to be sort of customized to each individual, so that when they come back, you know, it's had such a profound impact on them that they make a U-turn in their life. So for some people, they may interact with what they call universal source or the all or God or, you know, some people have that experience. Not everyone does. Some people see family members, you know, many family members, in fact, you know, family members they don't recognize. Some people see many beings of light and others don't see any. So, you know, it's all over the lot. There is no one size fits all. Even though the scientific community would like to kind of make this a neat and tidy package, you know, according to science, there are 16 elements of the NDE. And 16.
Okay.
16. And if you can check off a certain number of boxes and say that you know, let's say went through a tunnel or saw a light, you know, then they say that you are a research candidate for, you know, that you've had an NDE. The problem with that approach is that there are many people who had NDEs who are, who don't remember any of the elements or didn't experience any of the elements but still had very rich experiences. And they You know, the way the International Association of Near-Death Experiences, IANS, which, you know, they're now associations for everything these days. So there's an organization for near-death experiences. And the way they define near-death experiences is they say if you've come back transformed, unable to go back to the life that you led prior to the experience, that's how they define it. And I agree with them on that.
Okay. The you talk in your book about most NDEers come back and they feel a jolt getting back into their body. And you say this is kind of like the your consciousness getting shoehorned back into your body. Talk about that a little bit. Is that because the consciousness our consciousness is expanded when we get out of the body and now it's got to come back down, or, you know, what is it?
Yeah, that's a really excellent point that you make. You know, all the NDEers say that, you know, when they return to their bodies, they return with a thud or a jolt. It was, you know, very uncomfortable. And, you know, it appears as if, you know, we're just not built for consciousness to come into our body, at least an enhanced consciousness to come in like that. You know, it's, I think, more common for our consciousness to leave, you know, certainly on death, you know, our consciousness appears to separate from our bodies and doesn't come back in to the body. So with NDEs, you know, this is sort of an experiment of sorts, you know, from the universe, I think, and they haven't quite perfected it to allow the consciousness to re-enter. And as you point out, it is enhanced.
The universe hasn't perfected it.
Yes, I think the universe hasn't perfected it, you know, because we are human beings, you know, and I think the universe has this idea. I mean, this may sound crazy, but I believe that the universe, you know, first of all, there are 15 million people in the U.S. alone who claim to have had a near-death experience. And the numbers could be even higher than that because many people, as I said, don't know what a near-death experience is. But it appears as if the universe kind of has their eye on folks as candidates, you know, and they look at these people, and many of them seem to come from backgrounds that were referenced by darkness or abuse, and the universe kind of keeps its eye on these folks until a precise moment. But they, you know, it seems like they're saying, you know, they can be used. These people can be used. They're candidates for a higher purpose. They're candidates for enlightenment. They're candidates to go down a different path. And, you know, at a certain point in their life, a pivoting point, you know, it seems to be when they're taken. So, you know, the universe has this idea, and they're taking a lot of people and, you know, creating these near-death experiences. And it appears as if they're doing that to create pillars of light here on the earth. So, I mean, it's like a really nice idea. The only thing is that we all continue to live on Earth as human beings, and we're not really, you know, universal instruments to the degree maybe that the universe is making us into as a result of these experiences. So that's why I say, you know, I don't think it's been perfected yet, and that's why if you talk to NDEers, many of them will tell you, you know, that they have a difficult time adjusting.
In what way?
Well, they're not, you know, they're not the people that they used to be, almost, you know, in every way. So first of all, they, 65 to 75% of them get divorced because their spouse says, you know, honey, if you just stayed the way you were, we were fine, but they can't.
Not case now, and we don't.
Yeah, they're changed. Yeah, you know, you a lot of them can't tell their spouses, or, you know, if they do tell their spouse, you know, this is I talked to God, or I saw grandma, or, you know, I saw Jesus, or, you know, I saw this fantastic landscape, or they try to tell their families that, they just, you know, the families just roll their eyes. So that doesn't seem to work. You know, many of them come back, they are hypersensitive, so they can be sensitive to light, they can be sensitive to heat, to noise, to crowds, to other people. Many of them come back psychic and mediumistic. So, you know, they know what other people are thinking and feeling, and they feel it themselves. This is not great. You know, you don't, there's a Robert Barr, who I spoke about earlier, the man with the enhanced vision, told me a story about how he was in a Walmart, and he was standing next to a woman in line who he didn't know, and he heard a voice that said that she had painted her house, a room in her house, Chinese dragon red. So he tapped her on the shoulder and said, "Excuse me, but did you paint a room in your house red?" And she said, "Yes." And he said, "Was it Chinese dragon red?" And she said, "Yes," or no, she said, "Who are you?" And then he heard a voice say, "This is her sister, and tell her that I love her and I miss her." And he said, "You know, your sister loves you and misses you," at which point she left the store. And then he left the store and found himself out in the parking lot wondering what happened. You know, so these people, these NDEers come back, they're very porous. They hear things, they see things, they know things they shouldn't know. And many of them feel a compulsion to share these things with others, which is not really a very good idea. So, you know, so that makes it difficult to navigate the day-to-day.
Yeah, I can see that. You said in your book that the person we meet in an NDE is like meeting part of ourself. What do you mean by that?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that?
Yes. In your book, you said that the person that we meet in an NDE is like meeting part of ourself. Could you explain what you meant by that?
Well, you know, these people come face to face with another piece of themselves, I believe, through this experience, a piece that was unknown, a piece of their consciousness or their soul, you know, whatever you, however you want to define it, that they, you know, just weren't as in touch with in their day-to-day life here on Earth. And when they return from their NDEs, they return with that part of themselves much more prominent within themselves. So it's a more universal contact. It's a more spiritual, more, you know, enlightened part of themselves. It's been awakened.
Yeah. Okay. So it's almost like a reflection. They see certain aspects of themselves in the in the spiritual being that they encounter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The if NDEs have a purpose in the lives of an experiencer, what lessons can we learn from them? What should we gain from this?
Yeah. So what you know, I think the most profound lesson was that our consciousness is a living thing independent of our physical body. You know, science believes that our consciousness resides in our brain. You know, they believe that mind equals brain.
Right.
And, you know, prior to them thinking that consciousness was in the brain, they thought it was in the heart. And then they decided that wasn't correct. It's in the brain. So, but, you know, what I found in the research was that consciousness doesn't reside anywhere. It surrounds us. It's permeable. It's in the air that we breathe, and it permeates us, and it permeates all living things, and it lives independently from our physical body. It has a life of its own. So when our physical body dies, that energy that powers us, our battery, our essence that is us, our consciousness, that continues to live. That's independent from us. So, and that's what goes out into the universe in an NDE. That's the essence that I guess I communicate with when, you know, I'm a medium, so I talk to people who've passed over. And that essence continues to live. It lives in perpetuity. It has no there's no sense of time or space as far as consciousness is concerned. It's able to know all and be all. It's sort of, you know, if you think of like a camera out in the universe, it's able to peer down and see and be everywhere at the same time. That's, you know, sort of the best way I could describe how the consciousness appears to work. So I think the takeaway from all of this is that consciousness survives our physical body. I mean, here in the Western world, you know, we have a funny take on death, and, you know, of course, nobody likes to talk about it. You know, we think that our physical body ends, that's it. The screen goes blank, and that's the end of it. But, you know, that doesn't appear to be the case.
You know, I would agree with that 100%. And by the way, we talk about death a lot on this show because we don't think it goes away at all. Now, do you think that the universe is simply consciousness? Is everything in nature conscious?
Whoa, you asked some really intriguing questions. good question. So, is everything consciousness? I mean, certainly consciousness pervades all of our spaces. But, you know, I think most of us here on Earth, you know, everyone has consciousness. Some people have more consciousness than others, and others appear not to have any consciousness at all. So, you know, I think we're all imbued with it, but I think some of us use it more than others. But I do believe that it's, you know, in all living things. And the consciousness is everywhere. But I think that, you know, we live in a physically dense earth, and we believe that what we see and hear and feel and touch, you know, through our senses is reality. And that's really a very thin slice of reality. You know, there's this whole other reality that exudes from consciousness that most of us are not in touch with because we don't get it through our senses, our physical senses. You know, what we see on TV, we think that's reality because that's something we see and we hear. But, you know, this concept that there's many levels, you know, other levels out there is, it's a very hard concept for people to grasp because it's hard to prove. You know, we can't prove it through most of our mechanisms. And, it's just, you know, I think I was talking to some folks yesterday and they said, you know, if you had told me 6 or 7 years ago about NDE after effects and NDEs and all this stuff, I would have said you were crazy. But now I know, you know, and this is a professional person, a practical person. He said, you know, I've started thinking about this and reading some books, and I see that there's more than what we see. You know, there's more out there than what we see and experience. And, you know, in fact, you could see now with NASA in the space program, you know, they're having findings, I think, you know, almost every week showing that there are other, you know, other planets out there, other solar systems out there, sound waves in the universe. I mean, it's a vast universe with lots of other things happening beyond just our Earth.
Right. The world is not as it appears to be. You talk a lot about sacred geometry. And in particular, Leonardo da Vinci's Vitruvian Man. Where'd you come across this, and why is it important?
Oh, interesting. So one of the experiencers in the book is a fellow, Javier Pereza, and he had an unusual experience. He went to sleep one night. Now, I have to say, Javier is Hispanic, and he's very light-skinned, as he will tell you. And in the Hispanic tradition, if you're light-skinned, you're the favorite in the household. So he was his family's favorite, and that meant that when he wanted to eat dinner, everybody ate dinner. When he wanted to go on vacation, everybody went on vacation. And he was also his grandmother's favorite. So he was also not a very nice guy, but he went to sleep one night and he experienced a distressing NDE-like experience. And he felt like he was being pricked by 1,000 sharp needles. He saw ghoulish faces. He went through a dark tunnel, and he also saw his grandmother. Now, his grandmother was alive, but he saw his grandmother. The next day, he couldn't get out of bed. He was crying. He was overwhelmed. The following evening, his phone rang, and it was his cousin, And his cousin said, I have some bad news for you. And he said, I already know what it is. And she said, well, Grandma died last night. And he said, I know. And she said, well, did your brothers tell you? And he said, no. She said goodbye to me. So, you know, in this experience he had, his grandmother was saying goodbye to him. Now, I read for him, you know, he's in the book, and I read for him. And in his reading, I saw Vitruvian Man, the Leonardo da Vinci image that, you know, probably many people are familiar with, which is a man in all dimensions, you know, with these...
inside a circle. Everybody inside, thinks of it that way.
Right, right. And so I saw Vitruvian Man. And you know, now psychics see things in symbols. And Vitruvian Man, you know, is a symbol for the intersection of man and the universe. And, you know, it led me into kind of looking into, you know, the meaning of Vitruvian Man. And, you know, Michelangelo seemed to have been very specific in terms of creating this image. You know, led me to wonder if people such as Michelangelo or Galileo or Leonardo da Vinci, you know, did they have spiritually transformative experiences as well? Because these were people who were doing things that were so far ahead of their times, and they were so multi-talented and seemed to transcend, you know, a lot of human abilities. I mean, I don't know the answer to that, but this concept of Vitruvian Man is a man who walks both on the earth and in the universe, I think is a fascinating one.
I would agree with you 100%. You know, you say in the book that these patterns, these sacred geometry, these patterns, you know, like the Merkaba and Vitruvian Man and such like that, have great power. Is that because you see them as some of the patterns that were used to create the universe?
Well, there's pattern in everything in the universe. You know, there seem to be patterns in, here on Earth that repeat over and over. Of course, I can't remember what it's called now, but pattern, you know, is replete in the universe. And I think it was either Pythagoras or, you know, one of the or maybe one of the Greek scholars who said, you know, mathematics pervades, you know, defines the universe.
Pythagoras certainly said that.
Yeah. So, you know, pattern is everywhere and, you know, appears to play an important role in the structure of, you know, all things and, you know, perhaps in the structure of the universe. I mean, I don't, you know, look, I only touched, you know, the very, very, very tip of the iceberg here in terms of delving into this realm. You know, I was shown certain things and I have an understanding of certain things, but even my understanding is limited. You know, this is a, you know, NDEers, and I went with them, you know, on their NDEs when I read for them. You know, we're shown a lot of things that either that we don't understand, that we don't have the vocabulary to explain, that we don't have the, you know, the understanding of those realms to really translate them into our realm. So, you know, I can take away certain fundamental measures like sacred geometry and patterns, but the deeper meaning of all those and how they work, you know, in our lives in the universe is something that, you know, it's a bigger question to ponder.
Yeah, exactly. These are huge questions, but they're fascinating. You may have been just touching the edge, but the edge is a fascinating place. How do people find out about you and what you're doing and such? You have a website and such?
Yeah, sure, Dave. So I actually have two websites. One is DeborahDiamondAuthor.com, and Deborah is D-E-B-R-A, and Diamond is just like a diamond ring. So DeborahDiamondAuthor.com, and I also have a website, DeborahDiamondPsychic.com. So you can find me, you know, through either of those websites, and there are contact pages on those websites if you'd like to have a reading or a consultation. I find many people today actually are interested, you know, they're interested in readings, but they also find that they've had these experiences and they, you know, spiritually transformative experiences or NDEs, and they don't know what happened to them and their lives are turned upside down. They just need to talk to someone to figure out what the heck happened. So, you know, I'm talking to lots of people about that. There's a Facebook page for the book Life After Near Death, and your, you know, folks, your listeners are welcome to go on the Facebook page and like that page, and then they'll find out about events and anything in the NDE world. Let's see, there's, you know, they can certainly order the book online through Amazon or Barnes & Noble, and it's also available in many bookstores, Barnes & Noble and independent bookstores. So, you know, there's a variety of ways. I do a lot of speaking, and, you know, if they want to keep up on where I am, because I travel quite a bit, there's a list of all the events on my websites. Okay. So,
okay, yeah. Great. All right. We've been talking with Deborah Diamond, author of Life After Near Death. Deborah, thank you so much for being on the show. You've been a great guest. A lot of fun.
Thank you so much, Dave. It's been a pleasure.
Obtaining wisdom is a long process, as no one can bestow it on us. The more we talk and hear each other's ideas, the more we'll be able to mature our own views. Questions and answers from the chat room for today's show and other shows will be posted on my website at davidgagan.com. When you're at the website, you can ask other questions directly by going to the contact section of my website, and I'll publish those answers as well. You can even ask questions about the old shows. Also, I cover all these subjects and many more in my book, The Endless Journey. I look forward to sharing our thoughts every Friday morning at 9 a.m. United States Eastern Time here on W4CY.com. You can also find all the old episodes on iHeartRadio at iHeart.com. Truth is indeed stranger than fiction, and it turns out to be an amazingly good news story. We all have a great destiny ahead of us. Let me leave you with one last thought. You are a unique spirit having a life experience. You are far more important in the grander scheme of things than you can possibly realize. Enjoy your life. You've earned it.